Now, John, along with the University of Minnesota Extension educator, Dr. Stephen Carlson, you guys are teaching a one-day Master Naturalist workshop for anyone who is interested in teaching phenology to students in schools across northern Minnesota. The class is coming up Monday, August 14th, and you have until the 7th, a week before,
right,
to sign up for it. So do you have to be a teacher to do this, or what's the...
What our design is to find teachers in towns within the sound of our voices. So if you're a teacher out there, if you teach really any grade, because I think it can be, phenology can be adapted to just about any grade level. But if you're teaching, for example, fifth grade or sixth grade or seventh grade life sciences, we would really like to hear from you. We would like to get you involved in doing phenology with us. We would also like to find someone in your area who is a naturalist. So if you are a person who has sort of an abiding interest in nature, and I don't mean that you have to be, you know, the best botanist on the planet. You just have to have an abiding interest in nature. Remember, if you're the naturalist, you're going to be talking to teachers and to students who know very little about the outdoors. So even just a basic knowledge, you know, this is a spruce tree, these are balsam trees, here's the difference between spruce and balsam, those are pines, these are deciduous trees, this is a birch, that's a popple, that sort of thing. We would like to talk to you because we would like to have you, if you are, say, a retired forester from the DNR, or maybe you spent your life just being interested, like I have, in the outdoors, and now you got a little time on your hands. We'd like to have you join forces with us and sort of push a phenology platform into a school near you. So if we can find a teacher who is interested in teaching phenology, and that's pretty easily done because any teacher that has any experience with phenology is pretty recognizes how nicely it dovetails with learning and with science and writing and math and English. It just works so well on many, many levels. And if you are if you're a naturalist who would have the time, maybe an hour a week, to go into a classroom and sort of help them, you don't have, ideally what you would do is once a week you'd show up dressed for the weather and you would take the kids out for a hike, and after a couple of weeks of that, the kids would understand that come whatever day of the week it is that you agree to do this, they had better come to school prepared. I know that some of my students have gone out in tennis shoes and come in with pretty wet feet when the snow is on the ground. But any way you want to cut it, if you have that ability, if you think that you can do that, we will give you training. We will send you notices of what to be watching for. And there are some things that we would absolutely like you to watch for. A list of seven events that take place spring and fall that we would for sure like to have your eyes and the eyes of the students in your classroom on. So if that sounds like it might be interesting to you, why don't you get in touch with me? You can reach me at Jay Latimer. That's JLATIMER. And of course, you can always call the radio station and they'll pass along the information to me. So hope to hear from you. We got a big project going, and I'm excited about it. I think we can go, we can do a lot of good things for kids in schools around the area. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And typically this time of year, things just fall into schedule. We can have an early spring or a late spring, and by the 1st of July, we're kind of back on sort of a nice, even, oh yeah, okay, it's about time for this to happen. Oh, it's about time for that to happen. And one of the things that I watch for each year, and I'm aided in this by the fact that one of the spots where I take pictures up at the bog is surrounded by these beautiful little round-leafed sundews. Now, the round-leaf sundew is a wonderful little plant of the bogs. It's usually grows on a hummock up the side of a sphagnum. Roots are probably suspended in what passes for soil underneath the sphagnum, which is mostly just more sphagnum. At any rate, the round-leaf sundew exists in there, and every year about this time, it begins to flower. And I've tried a couple of times to get some pictures of the flowers, and my camera, because the flower is about, twice the size of a pinhead, half the size of a matchhead, it's kind of hard for the camera to kind of focus in on the flower itself. The plant, the leaf, is pretty spectacular all by itself, but the flower is really stunning, and you really got to get down in there to see them. But now is the time. So if you're walking about in the bogs in the next 24 hours, or actually probably in the next week, you may come across the flower of the sundew. And it is usually a sort of a bronze or a deep reddish brown kind of a colored little stem of fine filament, almost a string would look thick next to this stuff. But it's this filament that comes up and then hooks over like a shepherd's crook. And in the middle of that hook and going down toward the tip of the hook will be these tiny white flowers. And they are blooming right now. So good time to get out in the bogs. Always a good time to be out in the bogs. But today is an even better time because the round-leaf sundew will greet you with some little teeny tiny white flowers that are kind of worth checking out. July brings sort of a flush of flowers that look a lot like dandelions. The flowers themselves, they're large and yellow and have many, many, many petals and actually flowers if you get in there and start looking really closely. And one of those plants is called spiny-leaved sow thistle. Another is called common sow thistle. A third would be the hawkweeds. The hawkweeds now, you can always identify hawkweeds if you look at the ends of the petals, those little rays that stick out of there. They're ragged on the ends of the hawkweed. They look as though they were torn off. They're kind of irregular. But the sow thistles are sort of a dandelion look-alike. They stand much taller, usually upwards of 2 to 4 feet, and the flowers are, like I say, big like a dandelion. The leaves look like thistle leaves there, but they haven't got the spiny, pokey little prickers on them that the thistles do. Spiny-leaved sow thistle, even though it's called spiny-leaved sow thistle, it has very little in the way of spines. I mean, you can handle that plant, and unless your skin is remarkably tender, I think you'll find it not very intimidating. So the spiny-leaved sow thistle is blooming. Common sow thistle will be blooming very soon, maybe blooming even now as we speak. So you kind of want to check that out. The Canada thistle, to get back to the thistles, Canada thistle is in bloom right now, and that is kind of a bluish purple flower, a typical thistle flower. I can't help but, as an aside, note that Rhonda has just gone out and filled the bird feeder, and the brown thrasher must have been watching because it was there as soon as she turned her back on the feeder. It was in for some lunch or breakfast, I guess. So, yeah. Anyway, back to the Canada thistle. This one is prickery and would abrade even the finest or even the harshest skin, I guess. But the The thistle is in bloom, of course. The difference between the Canada thistle and the bull thistle, which are the two common thistles of northern Minnesota, is that the Canada thistle lacks spines on the stem. The bull thistle has spines all over it. Leaves, stem, everywhere has spines. So, and the bull thistle tends to be a bit redder than the blue of the Canada thistle. There's a hummingbird outside picking away at the tips of the spruce branches. I suspect it's looking for insects. Probably got young on its nest right now. The hummingbirds are at my house. I've got some young that are out of the nest right now, and I've got some that are probably still on the nest. And the mother is busy gathering insects for the little babies, because they don't need sugar, they need protein. And so the hummingbirds are pretty busy checking out lots of supplies for caterpillars and ants and spiders and whatever else they might find to feed to their young. This past week, I was on my way from the bog coming home one day, and I came around a little corner on a gravel road, and there were two ravens and two broad-winged hawks. And the ravens must have discovered the broad-winged hawk nest or gotten too close to it, and the broad-winged hawks were giving them all sorts of fits. Now, a broad-winged hawk is smaller than a raven and more adept as a flyer. And these guys were definitely pounding the ravens pretty hard and driving them away from the territory. I don't know if the ravens actually got into the nest of the broad-winged hawks or not, but they certainly must have been close, because these guys were... I would not have wanted to be one of the ravens, because the hawks were right on them, and every turn the raven made to avoid being attacked by the hawk was met by an equally quick and adept turn by the raven, or by the hawk, and the ravens were definitely getting the worst of that business. So pretty exciting to watch that go down right in front of me. I took a trip over to Deep Portage last weekend and met some fine folks over there and went for a nice hike, had a good time. But on the way over and back, I couldn't help but notice that there was lots of wild parsley in the ditches along Highway 200. So if you're traveling 200 this morning and listening to the radio, those tall yellow flowers, those big yellow discs of flowers that are 5, 6, 7 feet up in the air, that's wild parsley. And wild parsley is not to be fooled with. If you get the oil of that plant on your skin, it will cause extreme burns from the sun, blisters and that sort. It's a nasty bit of plant, and you probably, if you have it, you want to put on a long sleeve shirt, pardon me, and a pair of gloves, and go out and uproot it, pull it up from the ground, and throw it in a big plastic bag, and just seal the bag and leave it, and let it sit by your garbage or whatever. Just let it cook for a while until everything inside is a sodden and roasted mass of vegetation and no longer viable as a seed source. So wild parsley, watch for it, and if it shows up in your yard, try to get rid of it quickly, because if you don't, it will spread rapidly and you will be forever sorry that you didn't get after it when you had the chance. Whew. The goldfinch is having a little set too with another bird out here. Lots of things going on outside this morning, so grab your cup of coffee and go out on the deck. I'm sure you'll find something to look at. Basswood, I had heard both Dallas Hudson over in Akeley, and I had looked at basswood over the past weekend, and the flowers were still closed. And I saw some notes on Season Watch that the basswood flowers were open in certain areas. And of course, that is always an exciting moment. They're late. They're definitely late in coming to flower. Average date is the 9th of July, And we're already at the 11th of July today, so a couple days late. It should be any time now. The basswood should be breaking bud, opening those flowers, and this would be an excellent time if you have basswoods to go out and see if you can't get some of those flowers, because they make a wonderful tea. And not only do they make a wonderful tea, but just standing under a basswood when it's in flower is a pretty intoxicating event. So give it a chance. Get out and check out the basswoods in your neighborhood, and maybe you'll get really lucky and find some flowers you can pick and dry and turn into a nice tea. Common milkweed I saw blooming this past week. It was about 7 days late. Common mullein blooming this past week, and that one was about 3 days late. There's a bindweed blooming right now, and bindweed is that big white trumpet-shaped flower. Pardon me. Just about everybody who sees bindweed, their immediate response, their immediate reaction is, oh, look at the morning glory. Well, morning glory has a big, round, heart-shaped leaf, and it is definitely heart-shaped. And if you look at the big, white, trumpet-like flowers that are blooming right now and find the leaf, you'll see that it's much more arrowhead-shaped, much more like an arrowhead than a heart, and that is hedge bindweed. There's another bindweed called upright bindweed or low bindweed, which is very close to the ground, usually 10 or 12 inches up. And that one is in bloom as well. But these bindweeds, as I said, when you first see them, you're going to think morning glory, because that's the kind of flower they have. But we don't have morning glory here in northern Minnesota, or at least not, I've never seen it, not as a native plant. Note about the hummingbirds. For a couple weeks there, my feeders were kind of good to go. You could put some juice in them one day, and you wouldn't have to go back and do any checking or refilling for a week or more. And now the little devils are drinking it like it was whiskey and they were sailors. It's going down pretty hard and pretty fast. So I'm making a lot more hummingbird food right now than I was, 2 weeks ago. And I think part of that is that the parents are probably in the process now of giving their babies the opportunity to get out of the nest and do a little drinking on their own, find some of their own nectar. Although, as I mentioned here just a minute ago, there was one sort of checking out the spruce branches, and I suspect that that had to do with finding insects to feed to their young. Rose-breasted grosbeak babies are at the feeder. The blue jay babies are at the feeders. There's lots of babies out there that are fledged. I've got a family of Phoebes in my garage, and they are not fledged yet because mom and dad are throwing little fecal sacks over the edge of the nest onto the ground, and I put a plastic dog food bag down there. And boy, I'll tell you what, at the rate they're tossing it out of there, those kids are eating pretty good right now, pretty heavy diet of something, because they're definitely pounding a lot of food. And it's kind of fun to see. While I was out on the bog, I noticed that the buckbean plant has these little three green pod seeds that are present right now. And you can, if you're out on the bogs, you might want to check those out. You may also, if you're in the right kind of a spruce bog, you might want to look around for some of those blueberries, because both Sam Miltich and Dallas Hudson have been out picking blueberries, and so there are ripe blueberries here and there around the area. I won't even pretend to guess where these guys have been getting them, and they won't even pretend to tell me where they're finding them, so we'll be fine that way. They'll stay out of my way, and I'll stay out of theirs, and we'll have to go on and just hope that we stumble upon a good patch of blueberries ourselves. I noticed the early goldenrod is blooming, And that is just one day late. And so that's, you know, that's average, I guess. And the early goldenrod is the goldenrod that's in bloom right now. So don't dismay. I mean, there are a lot of different species of goldenrods, and sometimes it's hard to tell them apart. But the early goldenrod is the first to bloom, and it's pretty obvious right now. Besides early goldenrod, I noticed on my patch of Canada goldenrod that there were lots of the galls present, so looks like a good year for the little goldenrod gall flies. They're doing pretty well. I had a purple finch come to my feeder the other day. I haven't seen a purple finch at my feeder in quite some time, and not since last spring. So that was kind of fun. Swamp milkweed is blooming. They're a day late. And a plant called wild lettuce. Now, the tall lettuce and the wild lettuce are these big plants that have these leaves that look like thistles again, and the flowers never really open up. I mean, you kind of think there's going to be this big sort of dandelion-like flower come out, but they just barely protrude from the top of the flower bud. In the case of wild lettuce, they can be slightly orange, slightly yellow, or white. Doesn't seem to matter. And in the case of the tall blue lettuce, which is another plant with this similar characteristic, the flowers are blue. But as I said, the flowers, you always think the flowers are going to open more dramatically than they do. They sort of open a tiny bit and pollination occurs, and the next thing you see is a seed head, and in the meantime you don't really get a look at what you think might be a dandelion sort of a flower in there. Tall blue lettuce and wild lettuce are both getting close. I haven't seen any tall blue lettuce blooming yet, but I see lots of plants, and they're doing a good job of getting up there. Evening primrose is right on the edge of blooming. I expect to see evening primrose blooming in the next week before we talk again. So stay tuned for that. Keep your eyes open, and by all means, get outside. This is the season to really enjoy.
Don't forget, you can sign up for a podcast of phenology. Go to our website, kaxe.org, and send in your phenology notes. You can email John J. Latimer at kaxe.org. It is the Tuesday morning show.